many, many goals in life. For me, like, I don't know how many. Okay, I think I have two very big ones. To marry happy, to find myself a very nice lady that will be my wife. And that in maybe 10 years. And I want to, the other goal is to finish studies and have studied well and to get a good job. That is my goal. That's the two biggest goals.
So our goals so far are
work,
find a good wife, and happy. However you get the happiness, happy. Now, let me ask you a question. I want to throw to you a philosophical question. It's a question that has many facets. You guys can think about it. If you have an answer, I'm happy to hear it, but I don't want us to focus on this question yet unless you guys want to. What happens when what makes one person happy contradicts what makes someone else happy? We're neighbors, and I want to listen to loud music. And you want to go to sleep. We're married, and I want to go on vacation to the Bahamas, and you want to go on vacation skiing to Alaska. I want hot, you want cold. Now, if we could take more serious examples, I am president of Russia, and what will make me and my people happy is to conquer Ukraine and maybe to take in Saudi Arabia so that we have a good source of oil for free. That's what will make us happy. And what will make the Saudi Arabians happy is to blow up the World Trade Center. So you guys know the pilots were Saudi Arabian aristocracy. No one wants to talk about it, but yeah. So what happens, what makes one person happy contradicts someone else's life, as in the case of the World Trade Center, or someone else's happiness, as in the case of Russia and Chechnya and Russia and Saudi Arabia. If our goal in life is to be happy, so then we've drawn a picture of a life where it's survival of the fittest, meaning it's a dog-eat-dog world. If I have the nuclear capacity or the military capacity to overtake Saudi Arabia, there's nothing wrong with what I'm doing, because I'm simply doing what you would do if you were in my shoes. It's just a question of how can I be happy, right?
But the difference also is my goal of work, his goal of family, of being happy, and I think it's not affecting anyone else to the work.
And what happens when it's a question of you or someone else getting the job as a pilot?
That's not a question.
I'm saying in life you'll always be faced with this
question.
You or someone
else, then you just work harder. It's like it's not because of like you gamble and who gets to work. It's the best one gets to work.
Let's be realistic. A lot of getting a job is a question of how you present yourself, and sometimes you could get someone to stick in a good word about you or a bad word about someone else.
Yeah, then you have contacts, and then you
that's
are the better
true,
one.
But then you don't. But attacking Saudi Arabia, what you said, that's a direct action of getting it worse to someone else.
Right, but no one here said that any part of their goal was to make anyone else happy but themselves. Maybe in a family. But you guys notice that what you said, which is true for most people in the world, is all about me. It's all about what makes me happy, and no one said that part of their goal in life is to make anyone else happy. I asked what a person's goal in life is. Now that's very fair. That's what most people would say. The question is it really so fair? Meaning, you guys read Animal Farm, George Orwell?
Yeah.
Okay, isn't that the concept of the book? Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean Animal Farm. I meant the story about the island. Ooh, not Animal Farm. No, not 1984. Do you have a
the one with the kids on the island.
All the kids on the island. What's it called?
Lord of the Flies.
That's what I meant. Oh, so aren't we all talking like Lord of the Flies? Isn't that what we just said?
No, but yeah, it's okay to act only mostly for yourself, because everybody is supposed to do it in the society. Everybody is supposed to take care of himself.
So let's. Are you guys familiar with the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot? There's a Mishnah. You heard of Hillel? the elder Hillel. Yeah, you guys have heard of Hillel? Hillel was one of the leaders of the Jewish people. Hillel grew up in Babylon. He migrated to Babylon to learn by the great sages Shmaya and Avtalion. You heard of Shmaya and Avtalion? They were heads of the Jewish people. They were both Gerim. They weren't even Jewish. They became converts. Avtalion spent his life as head of the Jewish court, and his real name wasn't Avtalion. It was a nickname. Avtalion means father of the children. He adopted many, many orphans. That was like on the side. Aside from being head of the Jewish court, he used to have like an orphanage in his house. So he got the nickname Avtalion. And when everyone else was busy in Israel, Hillel went out and lived in sheer poverty out in Babylon, studying by these two sages. And when he came back to Israel, he knew more than all the other rabbis, and he became the head of the Jewish people. But he lived in poverty. He would literally cut wood every day to have means to live by. And if he didn't find buyers for the wood he cut in the forest, he didn't have what to eat that day. He lived in complete poverty, and he was always helping people. So Hillel taught us a balanced life. Hillel said what Daniel just said. He said, the first thing we have to know is, im en anili, if I won't fend for myself, mili, who's going to fend for me? No one's going to take care of me if I don't take care of myself. But he continued the Mishnah. He said, ukshani latzmi, but if my sole purpose in life is about me, mani, then what am I worth? What's my life worth if all my life was focused on my happiness? Think about it for a second. We start off life and all we know is I have to fend for myself. That's all a child knows as a child. If he's not going to cry, no one's going to know he needs something. If he's not going to fend for himself, no one will fend for him. But can we remain in that state throughout life? Is it fair for a person to really say my focus in life is about my happiness? That's what most people would say. But where would we be today if that were the way the world ran? Part of our goal as a Jewish people, part of what the Torah teaches us is how to be a good people to the world. When Hashem told us, I've chosen to use my Jewish people, so the concept of leadership in Judaism is a concept of responsibility. A leader is only given power in as much as he can use it to help others. If the Torah gives certain rights to a king, it's only because he could use those rights to help the people. It's not for his own benefit. That's not to say in our history people haven't misused their rights. But the fact that we walk around with the flag, we're the chosen people. God gave us a special garment, the tzitzis. That's a reminder. We have an obligation. We have 613 obligations. The chosen aspect of being chosen people means we're supposed to live a moral life, a life which leads the world to be a better place, a better world. It's not just a gift. Here, you're chosen. Now you're my favorites. I'll take care of you. I'll ensure you're not wiped out of off the planet. No, it's a responsibility. God says, now you have a responsibility to make the world a better place. One of the first concepts of being Jewish is to lead the world. What did Avraham Avinu do? Who knows? What was Avraham famous for? We're all descendants of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. What did Avraham do? Abraham? No one knows. Guys, what do you know about Abraham? Avraham Avinu. What did he do his whole life? You guys don't know, that's why you're silent? Or you know and you think I'm joking?
Will it be tired in the morning?
Then, you don't know?
You don't know what Abraham did?
Abraham did what?
What did he do in his lifetime? Say the Gemara. Admire your honesty. What did Abraham do in his life?
Abraham.
Yeah. What was he famous for?
I'm just going to pick my words right to describe it. He was the first monotheistic.
He was monotheistic?
Yeah.
Okay.
He talked to God.
Okay. What else, Ellie?
He had two children.
Oh, he had more than two. He had a few children.
Not sacrifice his son, but he was going to do it if it was a good one. God, Hashem told him. Yeah, but to show his. But that was not like his duty, it was just like a story.
Right.
I know it's somewhere far behind. Just tell him to give it out.
Okay. So think what you say, Daniel. What was Avram famous for?
Taking in guests.
What? Taking in guests. Oh. So then, you're right in the point that he was a monotheist. But what Daniel said is not less important. He began his life not only as the monotheist who the world tried to wipe out of the extinction. You know, they put him in jail for years. Avraham Avinu, when he started preaching and saying, stop paganism, they put him in jail. They put him in jail for 7 years in a jail where there was no light. And they, in those times, they knew that if you take a person and leave him without light for years on end, and then you suddenly expose him to light, then the retina can't handle it, and a person goes blind. Their plan was to make him blind. They figured, how much could a blind person do? And they also hoped they'd break him. Avraham wrote a book there. He wrote a book of philosophy about monotheism when he was in prison. He didn't let them break him. And not only that, one of the traditions we have is that he had a miracle, that he didn't go blind. And he didn't know if he'd walk out of that jail blind or not. And now he could have said, God, if you're around, why don't you help me out? I'm sitting here in jail rotting away. 12 years he spent in jail. 7 years in the jail that was just a dark dungeon. Couldn't see anything, and they gave him just meager bread and water. Now, we think, if you're a monotheist, if you really believe in it, where's your God? Why isn't he coming and helping you? We all know the story that God intervened when he was about to sacrifice his son, that he walked out of a burning furnace alive and unscathed. But what about the story that he first spent 12 years in jail? 12 years where the authorities were tormenting him and saying, where's your God? Why doesn't he take you out? How many people could stand up to that? But Avram's fame, notice this story you guys didn't know, right? Ask the average guy in the Beis Medrash, they don't know it either. Right? The average person who's learning yeshiva doesn't know the story either. It's in the Talmud, it's in the Medrash, but people don't know it because that's not what Avram's fame is for. Today, we'd say, oh, he's a Sharansky, right? He stood up to the authorities. You guys know, you heard Natan Sharansky, right? Natan Sharansky, the Russians wanted to break him, and he kept saying, no, I'm a Jew. And finally, there was a lot of world pressure that they should release him. So the story goes that they released him from jail, and he was by the border, and they told him, you go there to the other side of the border. We're letting you out. So he didn't go straight. He went in a zigzag. He went this way and this way and this way and this way until he got to the other border. So they asked him, why'd you go in a zigzag? So he said, because if the Russians tell me to go straight to the border, I'm not going to go straight. So I went in a zigzag. I'll go to the border, but not the way they said. He was a very tough person. He's living today. He lives in my neighborhood. He's a neighbor of mine. He's not a legend. I mean, he's a legend, but he's a living legend. You guys heard of... what's his name? Mendelovich, Yosle Mendelovich. He was imprisoned because he went against communism. When he was in jail, they in Siberia, they used to give him specially wide clothing so that the wind would freeze them to death. So he took from the clothing they gave him and he cut out a yarmulke. He put a yarmulke on his head. So the warden brought him into his office and said, Mendelovich, take off the yarmulke. And he said, I'm not taking off the yarmulke. So he pulled out his revolver, put it to his head, and he said, I'm going to count till 10, and you're going to take off that yarmulke, or I'm going to pull the trigger. And Yosle Mendelovich said, you could count till 10, and I'm not going to take off the yarmulke, and you're not going to shoot me. So he starts counting, and he said to him, you're not going to shoot me, because you don't know if Moscow wants you to shoot me. And if you shoot me, that's going to cause a political uproar in the world, and you could have your head fried for it. And I'm not going to take off the yarmulke because I fear God. I don't fear you. So I could stand here and fear God and not take off my yarmulke, but you don't fear God. You fear Moscow, so you won't shoot me. And the warden put down his gun and he said, you're right. I teach with him in Machon Meir. Again, another living legend. So they're people who are famous because they stood up to the Russians. They stood up to the forces that tried to break their beliefs. Avraham Avinu, no one knows this story about. People don't know the story. It's written in Talmud. It's written in Medrash. That's not what people know. What do people know then? They know he was monotheist. What people know? They know he did achnasat tochim. He took in guests. They go hand in hand. The Torah teaches us a balance. It's not enough that a person puts on tefillin every morning, that a person says, Shema Yisrael, I recognize Hashem, you're running the world. A very integral part to being Jewish is to being a light that shines onto others. So, if you think about your answers were what every guy your age would answer. Because what have you been doing? You've been studying to advance yourself. You're focused on going to college and getting a good job. You have to focus on advancing yourself, for sure. But there's also that balance that the Torah teaches us. Uchshani latzmi, my focus is only me, mani, what am I? What's the end of the Mishnah? 10. What's the end of the Mishnah? The end of the Mishnah, Hillel says, a very peculiar line. He says, "Ve'im lo achshav," and if not now, "ein matai," then when? What's the connection? We'll go around the room. I want to see what you guys think. He said three lines. Imena nili mili. If I won't fend for myself, who will? Uchshani latzmi. And if I fend for myself alone, what's it worth? Ve'im lo achshav ein matai. If not now, when? What's the connection? Then. Think.
Like you have to take care of yourself and get yourself a job, but doing it for a bigger purpose. So then maybe as important. Tzedakah. You cannot, that's one example just. You cannot give tzedakah if you don't have a job. So you first have to take care of yourself so you can live and have a life and maybe have an income as well. And then you can do other bigger purposes.
So how do you understand that last line, and if not now, when? What's it connected to?
That one I never got in, it was just the two others.
Oh, so that's what I want you to think about. What's the connection?
If not now, when?
He said all three, and they're connected. What do you say, Daniel? Ellie's thinking and Dan is thinking. We'll get back to them in a second.
I don't know. Not now. If I don't start today, when? Why would it be better to start tomorrow?
So what about Ellie's claim? I'll have a bigger income. Let me start when I have my income in 10 years. Why do I have to think about other people now?
Because in 10 years maybe you have forgotten them if you haven't done anything for them. In 10 years maybe you will forget it. When you have a big income.
I didn't say you shouldn't start now. I say you're doing it for yourself for a bigger purpose, so you should also take care of yourself. Like, who was the one who did wood?
Hillel,
yeah, so it's like, he did it for himself, so he could get the money, but he did it for a bigger purpose later on as well. He had the trouble doing, teaching others at the same time, so then he couldn't, but if he would live in Israel, maybe he could have taught other people at the same time as he studied as well.
Okay.
So it's also depending on the situation.
Maybe it's not only with the income, maybe it's like if somebody have a bad day, you can say something to them, and then you have started already.
Oh, what did you just say? Guys, listen to the man. You want to explain? Go ahead. What does it mean? If I'm only for myself, if I won't fight for myself, who will? And if I'm only for myself, then what's it worth? But if not now, when? So what? How do you explain that third sentence?
You start today, something small. It doesn't have to be very big.
Ah. Meaning, very often, and this is the article I want to give you, people spend their life forming goals in the future. I'll be happy when I have a job. I'll be happy when I have a wife. I'll be happy when I have kids. Or I'll do acts of kindness. Or I will be more observant. Or I will fulfill my dreams in life. Or I will feel satisfaction. Or I will take a moment to take in the breath and actually live. When I can stop because I don't have tests. When I can have a job and I have an income and I don't have to worry about it. When I'll be healthy. When I'll have a wife. When I'll have kids. When my kids will be grown up and they stop driving me crazy. When my wife will stop nagging me. When I'm old enough that I have pension and I could retire. People spend their whole life focusing forward and not living now. Hillel told us, if not now, when? That's an application to even being a good person. You can't just say, well, I'll do good unto others then. Wait, you could do today. What do you mean? In 10 years from now I'll start? No. So today I can't do it in the things I'll be able to do in 10 years. You're right. I have to prepare for 10 years now. I'll have a good income. But I could do a lot of things now. I want to get back to that in a second. What do you say, David? What's the connection between if I'm only for myself, if I won't be for myself, who will? If I'm only for myself, what am I worth? And if not now, when? And if I only take care of myself, what am I worth? And if not now, then when?
The third one, I have to start somewhere. But if you start small, you can do big later.
Okay. What do you say?
My mom told me those three lines when I was small all the time.
And?
But I don't remember when she did. And I don't remember how I read it. I just thought it was like, oh. I think I read like It's because I forget. I only remember the last sentence she said to me.
Not now when?
Yeah, I gotta start now. I think she told this to me when she told me to stop smoking. I think, if not now when, and the other two. She told that to me too. I don't really know. I just see them as mama's wise words.
I hear. Yeah. I want to tell you guys something. But this is personal for me. I've had the good fortune of learning with thousands of guys in the last years. Thousands, literally. I think we're up to over 20,000 between the guys that come here and where I teach in the night and in the afternoon. Literally thousands. Your group has exceptional potential. I can't talk to the guys who aren't here. You guys have what to learn. But each and every one of you can turn your community around. And your community is a community where you guys know better than me. You're coming from a place where you're in a desert. I mean, you guys know it. You guys know better than me. But if you guys take the time you have here and take the information and learn, you're going to come back, you guys, to be the leaders of the community. And I'm going to be happy to work with you not only here now, to the future as well. I think if you take the time to think about it, then we could set up a game plan where you walk away with the tools to head the community. Not only be a Madrich in Bnei Akiva. I'm talking about ultimately being a rabbi too. And you're not the first person I've said it to. But so far, I have a pretty good success rate. In the last 5 to 10 years, most of the people I said it to are on their way. Are on their way to being heads of the community. One's going to be the president. He's getting his job. And a rabbi doesn't mean you won't learn. You won't learn a field. But think about it. You have the capacity now to learn Torah. Your communities don't. You know where you came from. You know all the other guys, what they are up to. Who's going to teach Torah to your community? Who's going to lead your communities forward? And if not now, when? I will be happy to meet with each and every one of you individually. We could go out for coffee. We could go out for pizza. Sit down and think together how we set up a game plan so that you make the most of the time that you have left here. And it doesn't have to be classes. You don't want classes, we'll figure something else out. I have to work within the framework that Rav Neria sets up. I mean, I don't head the program here. But I want to work with you to think how you're going to make the most of your time here, because our investment is not only in you. Each of you has potential for the whole community and the people at large. You guys have strengths like we don't see. We see other guys coming in here. I see the strength burning in each of you, but it's a spark that needs to be lit. Now it's up to you guys where you're going to take it. But you have to know that, especially as professionals, your contribution to the community, as professionals who will know Torah, who will have Jewish values, your contribution is 10 times more than someone who just walks in from the outside. I don't think if I walk in there and give classes, I could do what you guys could do. So now it's in your hands. I'm going to be here tomorrow. You guys are off on a trip. But you know what? Those of you who want, we could start today. You want to eat lunch? Think about it. If any of you want to meet still today, let me know while I pack up my stuff. And if not, then Wednesday. The ball's in your hands. You guys, you're already here 2 weeks now, right? Okay, there isn't that much time left. This is your third week. You have a month and a week. And that's it. And I don't know if you're ever going to have this opportunity again. Now it's in your hands. I would like to work with you. But the question is where you guys want to go. And if not now, when? Enjoy your lunch.